Cricket on the Brain 24/7 365. Well, every Monday, Corbin Middlemass and ex-test opener Ed Cowan join forces on the ABC Cricket Podcast.
And I watch him bat and I think it's like Brian Lara on steroids.
Featuring the best analysis and biggest results.
We're not better off trying to blood someone else in a series like this.
And the stories that have your cricket thread popping off.
So if I'm buying the Renegades, why would I want to purchase that?
ABC Cricket Podcast. Every Monday on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts. Because there's no off-season in cricket.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Do you remember that? It's 2005. Australian football fans booing Uruguay and their anthem ahead of the crucial World Cup qualifier that proved definitive to the sport in this country. The approach from Socceroos supporters there reflected the disrespect they had felt from that nation. Well, Mark Schwarzer was the hero of that game. And he sees parallels between the talk leading into that fixture and the one coming this weekend against the United States. The emotion is driven by disrespect. Schwarzer's going to unpack that and break down the clash with the USA. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily World Cup Special. Mark Schwartz has been to two World Cups. He has 109 Socceroo caps. He joins us now, Mark. Since we last spoke, Australia has been buzzing ahead of the clash with the United States. As someone on the ground and part of the world feed covering the tournament, when you talk to Americans ahead of this clash, how are they viewing it? Is the banter rising?
Obviously, the social media element and that traction and what you see on coverages over here in the US is something that they're obviously hyping it up, and there's a few people obviously who are very outspoken and have said some pretty interesting stuff. But I kind of just like I said before, I've always said our performances do their talking. And I also think there's an element you need to have some respect. And the US have a good side there. You can't underestimate them. They're going to be a real challenge. They're the favourites. They have to win. All the pressure is on the US to win the game. They are host. They're the host. One of the host countries. They are playing at home. The stadium's going to be packed. 95% are going to be US supporters, and we're going to have obviously a really nice supportive Socceroo fans, because we always do. And the pressure's on the US to deliver. You know, they delivered in the first game. They did really well, as did we. We delivered and did very well in our first game, and now it's set up for a really, really interesting and I think hotly contested battle. And I just hope that it's a good game of football. And in the end, I mean, look, I'm quietly confident in the team, and I think that the Socceroos have proven already that they should be respected more than what they have in the past. And I mean, the feeling is that the US team do actually respect them, because they've gone about their business, kept their head down, and you know, they know it's going to be a fight and they're up for it.
It has been really fascinating to watch the level of engagement here in Australia. People who maybe aren't traditionally football fans seeing the way that the smack talk has drawn people in. Like, I think it's kind of undeniable. And I was trying to think, when was the last time we had such a kind of a pointed lead into a game? And like, I feel like it was Uruguay 2005. Can you remember, would you say that that's the biggest lead in comparison?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the comparison is a good one, because it was all about respect and the lack of respect. It was the lack of respect Uruguay showed us back in 2005, particularly the first game. Or even goes back further than that. It goes back to the previous campaign in 2001, where, you know, we were treated very, very poorly, and they did every tactic in the book to try and put us off, and inevitably it worked. And then fast forward 2005. The worst bit was the national anthem. You know, they completely disrespected us when they played the national anthem, starting it halfway through and then stopping it and then starting it from the beginning, and you know, which I think was absolutely disgraceful. And then obviously the Australian public knew all about it, saw it, heard it, and they responded. And I just actually heard some clips and saw a video footage of the national anthem being sung at that qualifier in 2005, and the noise was off the charts. And that continued also the booing and the whistling, which is the first time I've ever heard it from an Australian audience during the Uruguayan national anthem. And actually, it's the only time I've ever thought, yeah, you know what, they deserve it. And the rest is history. And I think there's a similar kind of element to this one, not to the same level of disrespect, but certainly from people on the peripheral that are there to make a name for themselves and want to be heard and have just made some outlandish comments. And I think, like I've said it a number of times now, I think very disrespectful comments about our national team. And I think that's why this environment's been created. We've got a really good sort of competitiveness, competition between us and England, for example, in all sports and even in football. You know, arguably for us as Australians in football, it's more important for us to beat them than it is for them to beat us, because they also kind of think, well, they're on a different level to us. And one could kind of go, well, yeah, okay, I can get where they're coming from, but they never outwardly say it. They're not disrespectful towards us. So that's a very different kind of, I think, competition or certainly rivalry between the two countries. And it's a very deep one. Whereas this one now is just there's a little bit of nastiness to it.
And that was my next question, because as a player, you've experienced when there is that noise externally, and these players would feel it because every press conference, the reporters are asking again about, I guess, outside noise. So would you recommend, or would you expect that this group are going to steer into the fever, or are they going to swerve it?
There's no doubt that, you know, they know about it, they've heard about it, and they will be, to a degree, annoyed by it in some way, right? And is it going to put them off their game? No. But what it's going to do is it's going to give them that tiny little bit of extra incentive and energy to go out there and, again, prove another team wrong, you know, another whole lot of people wrong, that, you know, Australia are not here just to be a number, you know, and write us off at your peril. And, you know, we're going to really go for it, and we're going to make it very, very difficult for you to get the win. If they're going to beat us, they're going to deserve to beat us. And that's what it's about. It's about going out there and putting out your best performance. And if that can lead you to winning the game, then brilliant. If it doesn't, it's kind of like, okay, well, they were just too good, or they got the rub of the green, or, you know, it was just one of those games that didn't sort of fall in our place. That's just the way it is. But I think it's more about us putting out our performance, the best performance we can, and making it incredibly difficult for the US side to have a kind of a bit of an easier night, like they did against in their first game against Paraguay. But they took advantage of it. There's no doubt about it. I mean, we can say that Paraguay were very underwhelming, which I think they were. However, the US took advantage of it, and they performed very well.
It's been as a consequence of what we saw in that first clash against Turkey, like feverish in Australia. And it's been a lot of like invoking of huge Socceroos moments gone past, like Kaiserslautern's been on loop. And to see people like yourself, Harry Kuehl, you know, in the media, there's a connection to that great team of 06. Are you guys interacting? But is there a WhatsApp chain? Are you guys interacting with what is going as a group?
No, we aren't. So I think we're just connected anyway. And look, we're all very passionate about playing for the Socceroos, playing for Australia, representing Australia. And, you know, the fact that, you know, we are such a diverse country, multicultural country, and I said it before as well, football is the only sport that unites every background. Every single background in the country is united by football. The men's and the women's team alike, boys and girls across the country of any different ethnicity, any background, we're all Australian, and we're all, you know, we're all bound by this sport that everyone loves. And it's the world game. It's the most participated game in our country. It's the one unifier of anything, whether it's politics, whether it's anything in the country. Football is the one unifier for all in the country. That's our biggest strength. And I think we see it time and time again. You look at our national team makeup right now, you know, you look at the diversity of our side, you know, some phenomenal footballers, some incredible human beings from different walks of life, different backgrounds, who all call Australia home and feel very, very passionate about playing for Australia.
We've had a few days to consider tactical tweaks. Tony Popovich has shown he's not afraid to shake things up. If you were trying to read the mind of Tony Popovich, I mean, good luck to either of us to do that. But what changes, what reins could he pull against the United States?
It's so hard to predict, isn't it? I don't think anyone predicted the you know, the squad against Turkey, and I think, or the team, the starting 11. And it's a real tough one, I think, even now to try and predict. Look, Pop has made changes in the past, and he won't be afraid to make changes again. If he feels that it's the right time, the right balance of the side, we don't know exactly if, you know, if someone may be feeling it a little bit, someone may be carrying something. The hope is that you go further in the tournament. It's a squad game. All those things come into it. There's a possibility. There are the likes of Jackson Irvine. I think, you know, Harrington's another possibility that could potentially come into the side. Whether he starts with Irinkunda, whether he, you know, continues with Irinkunda, which you'd hope because of the attacking flair, the advantage you have with a player of that speed and that skill level.
Over the top, here's Nestori. Great first touch. Nestori, Irinkunda! Oh, my word! It's a Nestori moment in Vancouver!
Moture was exceptional. Depends really on how they felt and how they pulled up after the game. And also, look, I think there's a sense of a little bit of an advantage by not having a complete understanding of what team may be played. Because when you look at the game against Turquia, I think Turquia would have been completely thrown off by the fact that the changes that he made, you know, starting Patrick Beech in goal, you know, playing, you know, Paul Okon-Engsler in midfield. I don't think they would have had that in their minds that these guys would have played, and that tactically could have thrown them as well. So it's one of those ones. It's a potential curveball out there. And there's almost a curveball if he actually keeps the same team, because with the way that Popper's operated, you're almost expecting something different to happen.
And I wonder as well, given you spoke about the impetus, the pressure being on the United States, home nation, we know the expectations are high. Does that play into what we saw in the opening fixture from the Socceroos, a capacity to sit back, be compact, try to hit teams in transition for this fixture?
I think so, because the US, I believe, will come out of the blocks like they did against Paraguay. They will look to try and, you know, swarm, pressure, win the ball high up the park, hit you really hard, really quickly. They've got the home advantage. They'll be obviously right up for it. There'll be a lot of adrenaline. There'll be an element of, for them, the difficulty is, I think, trying to control that and to make sure that they don't just go on adrenaline alone and get carried away with the atmosphere. And that's one of the challenges, right, of being in a World Cup, particularly. The fact that you're at a World Cup, you're at a home World Cup, the pressure, the expectation, and you get caught up with all the hype and all the energy that's in that stadium. But they've dealt with it so far very, very well. And you know, I'd expect them to come out and to try and do the same thing to the Socceroos once again. But I believe defensively we're far, far better than what Paraguay are. And certainly in that performance, certainly in that game, I mean, going forward, we'll have to wait and see. But I think certainly in that first game, when you compare the two teams defensively, we're far more solid, far more organised. And I think the big threat of going forward on the counter, that's something that can be a real advantage to us as well, because the US like to get players forward. Maybe there's a way of exploiting them at the back with the pace that we have. And I think it is a strength. I think it's a real weapon that you can use to your advantage.
I got no idea about your connection or relationship with Matty Ryan, but I was just intrigued to know whether you potentially reached out to him at all during the week with any advice.
I have reached out to him, of course, because obviously I know him pretty well, and he's a top guy, and he's done really, really well. He's been a great captain for the national team, and obviously every time he's played for the national team, he's been fantastic. So I felt for him. I've been there before. I know how he feels, and I did definitely reach out to him and ask him how he was.
It's such a tough thing to take from a captain, let alone a goalkeeper. I can imagine, because when you go and watch as a media person training sessions, there's, you know, teams within teams, and to watch the goalkeepers work together but also in direct competition, that must be like a very odd thing to do in the second week of a World Cup to be living in that ecosystem.
Yeah, I think so. And for anyone to kind of lose your position, it's tough at any time, let alone at a World Cup, you know. And I think we spoke about this before the World Cup, talking about, you know, I thought that Matty was a kind of like a dead cert to start because of his form at Levante, and probably the best form I've seen him in his whole career, personally, what I've seen. And I felt like, you know, he's pretty much a dead cert to play. And then, of course, he doesn't. And then you have to add to the mix that he's captain of the national team. So there's an added responsibility. And it's about the environment, the culture within the side, about, doesn't matter if you play or not, it's all about the team and about being involved, being up for it, being positive and supporting everyone. And I think that's really clear with the Socceroos. You can see that with every single player, how much of involvement, how much buy-in they've all got. And Matty was no different. Jackson Irvine, you know, again as well, you know, being off the pitch. But just the buy-in, the commitment, the support that these guys have given, even though they've got probably personal, definitely personal disappointment of not starting, because you want that as well. I want players to be disappointed they're not playing. I want them to be hurting. I want them to be fighting for the position all the time. And that's what these guys are feeling, and that's what they're doing. They're continuously putting up a fight as well, because they all want to play. Everyone wants to play. And you're continuously trying to remind the manager that you're there, that you're ready, and you're willing to play, and you're desperate to play, and you're hoping that he might pick you.
Transfer noise. It's building. Lucas Herrington linked to Barcelona, Alessandro Ciccati, Atletico, Jordi Boss, Ocon Engsler, Iran Kunda. Buzz, buzz, buzz. I just imagine, is that noise motivating, distracting? Have you seen the way it can impact a group?
No, in my experience, certainly with the national team, there's always been kind of a positive influence. It's never really gotten, no one's really gotten carried away with it. I don't think these guys will get carried away with it. You know, we're at a World Cup, we're one game in, we've got a massive game coming up in a couple of days' time, and it's about now making sure that you continue to put the performance in. I mean, one of the mantras that I've always had as a player going through my whole career was like, you're only as good as your last game. And, you know, the bar was set by your last performance, and then it's about, can I at the very minimum reproduce that kind of form, that level of performance? And that's always what I always do say to myself. So for a lot of these guys, it's, you know, you can't just put in one great performance and then just rest on your laurels. You know, you need to go out there and back it up again. Show that that wasn't a one-off. Show that you've got consistency, you've got that level, you've grown as a footballer, that you can reproduce that performance time and time again. Of course, everyone has a dip. It's how you respond, how you get yourself back up again, how you get back on and deliver. And if you make a mistake in a game, how you respond to that mistake, that you don't crumble, that you actually, you dig in and you get even more focused, and you don't chase the game, and you just make sure that you do your job and you don't make another mistake, and certainly don't make the same mistake twice.
England just started its campaign with a 4-2 win over Croatia. 2 goals for Kane. 1 for Bellingham, which I don't think can be overstated. 1 for Rashford. What a string to be able to pull if you're Thomas Tuchel to bring him off the bench. When you think about this squad, and particularly Kane, that's got to be as good a start as you could have hoped for, aside from obviously copping 2 goals.
I think so, yeah. Look, I thought their start was really good. I thought their start was really poor. They were very nervous. They looked nervous. They looked a little bit disorganized, which was a bit strange. I was a bit surprised with that. And of course, then they take the lead and they get pegged back. And then they take the lead again and they get pegged back again. So it was one of those sort of up and down sort of performances. And you just thought, hang on, how are they going to respond? What kind of response are you going to get from this England team? Because obviously there's a lot of criticism, certainly objections, eyebrows risen by some players that didn't make the squad, some players that are in the squad. How are they going to perform? Do they justify their selection? And ultimately, the result justifies, so far, Croatia a good side. You know, more experienced side, of course, somewhat of an aging side. However, they got, I think, a pretty decent blend and mixture of youth and really experienced players. And I think that performance was a kind of a marker setter, and it showed that certainly the second half performance, that England, even off the back of the first performance where there could have easily been doubters, there could have easily been a real sense of uneasiness within the stadium amongst England supporters because they've seen this thing before, but their response in the second half was exceptional. And I thought there's a lot of credit there to be given to the team and the manager, and I think that shows you this is a bit of a different England to what we've potentially seen in the past.
Hey, Lionel Messi scored a hat-trick yesterday as he closes in on his 39th birthday. I mean, you were playing top level in your 40s, so maybe you're not as wowed as the rest of us. But
not at Lionel Messi's level either, so I'm not banging in hat-tricks either. But, I mean, we're talking about a different level here, but you're right. I mean, Messi has been insane, absolutely insane.
Is it possible we kind of underappreciated the impact of him playing club football in the United States for a tournament that's predominantly held in the United States? And is this an indication that Argentina, a World Cup defence, is very much in play? They could become the third nation to do it.
Yes to all of the above, but I also think I was really disappointed with Algeria. I felt that for the side that they have, I thought you'd get a bit more from them. I thought they would put Argentina in a little bit more pressure. Look, you look at Argentina's squad, it's packed full of top class quality players. Messi doesn't look the age that he is, certainly in that performance against Algeria. I think playing in the MLS has certainly helped him, but then there's always the danger that playing at a lesser league, that maybe your standards drop a little bit. But he didn't look leggy. He didn't look out of place. He was very fortunate to stay on the football pitch. He should have had a red card. And I don't know whether that's a bit, you know, sometimes referees, maybe even referees, and certainly when you talk about one of the biggest superstars and one of the possibly the goats of football, commit to a foul, and whether it's intentional or not, I mean, it was a pretty poor foul, and I think he's a very, very lucky man to have stayed on the pitch.
The studs were very much up. If he exploded out of the gates, Ronaldo less so. 1-1 draw with DR Congo for Portugal. Is his manager, like, Portugal's quality as a squad is elite. You sort of highlighted the fact that they'd be a better team if he was coming off the bench leading into this tournament. Is his manager going to have the courage to bench him?
I don't think they are. I mean, I listened to Martinez's response after the game.
I think you can use the qualities of Cristiano Ronaldo. It makes no sense to get the best goal scorer in world football out in a game that you need goals. I think for us, in moments like this, the experience of Cristiano in the box is important. The way that he attracts defenders is important. The way that we can use the space is important. Clearly, when you look for goals, you need to have Cristiano on the pitch.
And I kind of get what he says. The question is, at his age, at the level he's playing at, is he able to do it at a major tournament? The Euros, he didn't. The Euros, even then, I felt that he looked like he was kind of almost holding them back a little bit in the way in which they play. And I feel like, I still believe, I think Portugal would be a better side with him coming off the bench. I think today was another great example of that. And again, it's not being, people, there's haters out there will get really angry about it. And the fact that, you know, how can you talk that about Cristiano Ronaldo? It's a reality. The guy's 41 years old. He's almost a freak of nature of how long he's been able to stay at the level he's at, the condition he's in. But age catches up with everyone, you know, and he's not as sharp as he used to be. He's certainly not as prolific as he used to be. So they're all facts, but I also look at the Portugal side and go, they're a really top-class squad of players. But a Cristiano Ronaldo on the bench, his influence, his leadership, he's influenced later on in the game. See, I would have loved to have seen him come on. If Portugal were in that situation with 15, 20 minutes to go, half an hour to go, bring him on then. And I think the impact would have been substantial. I think the lift would have been substantial, even far more substantial than him starting for Portugal.
Let's finish where we started. Socceroos, get your crystal ball out. Prediction time. If you could give us a result, a score, how are you seeing this one?
Look, my heart says the Socceroos is going to win, of course. And I'm going to say like a 2-1. But reality, I feel like it's a draw. I think we'd be, you know, pretty happy with that, considering the circumstances in terms of who you come up against, host nation, the support they've got, the energy they've got, obviously buoyed from their first win. So I just think it can go either way. I think it's such a closely contested match. I'm really looking forward to it because I think it's just going to be such a competitive match, and we're going to see two teams really throwing everything at it.
Can't wait to see it. Can't wait to unpack it with you after the final whistle. Mark Schwarzer, thanks so much.
Pleasure.
Headlines. As we mentioned, England victorious against Croatia 4-2. Coach Thomas Tuchel was making a World Cup managerial debut, and the German was stinging to get around the English anthem, but the photographers got in the way.
And I have to tell you something. I'm begging FIFA to change the position of the photographers in the national anthem, because I could not see my team in the national anthem, and I was waiting for this moment. It was a very, very special moment today, and I was standing in front of a wall of 50 photographers and I could not see one single player, and it ruined a little bit my experience today. It is very emotional.
What a surprise subplot. Ghana scored deep in extra time as they beat Panama 1-0. Meanwhile, Colombia beat Uzbekistan in Mexico. The South American opener was off the chain. A looped ball into the box over Daniel Munoz's shoulder. He tracks the ball, hits it with the outside of his right foot and into the net. And finally, we told you about Vizinha, the Cabo Verde keeper, who played out of his skin to gain the African nation a draw with Spain. He acquired 13 million Instagram followers in the process. That number's still climbing. But what he really wanted more than anything was his mum to see him play in the World Cup. That is too sweet. She'd had some visa complications. Well, the 59-year-old cleaner has now been granted one, and she's going to see her son play Uruguay next up. Warms the heart. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily World Cup special produced by Declan Byrne. Thanks to SBS for the extra audio used in this episode.